This is Learning About the Roman Liturgy with Louis Tofari. The rubrics, the liturgy, the traditions of the Roman Catholic faith. And now, here's Louis Tofari.
Hello, and welcome to Learning About the Roman Liturgy. I'm your host, Louis Tofari of Romanitas Press, a liturgical media apostolate dedicated to providing resources for the Roman liturgy. Last week, we briefly discussed the use of Latin in the Roman Mass. Today, we are going to discuss some of the changes that have occurred in the Roman Mass throughout its history. Many might think that the traditional Roman Mass of today, as prescribed in the 1962 Missale Romanum, is identical to the form used during the time of Pope St. Gregory the Great, or even of Pope St. Peter. But in fact, the texts and rituals of the Roman Mass have undergone substantial changes over the centuries. Part of this occurred as a standardized rite of the Roman Mass did not exist for the entire Church for over 1,500 years. In earlier centuries, local bishops were allowed to make local variations to how they celebrated the Mass in their diocese. Printers of liturgical books were also at liberty to choose what ritualistic actions and texts to include in their editions. Of course, even the popes would make changes to how they offered the Roman Mass. These revisions can especially be seen in the various preserved sacramentaries, the name of the book that contained the prayers used by the celebrant of the Mass and for other ceremonies, and is the predecessor of the altar missal. Some of the most famous of these sacramentaries compiled for the Bishop of Rome, that is the Pope, are the so-called Leonine Sacramentary, the Gregorian Sacramentary, and the Galesian Sacramentary. While these Liber Sacramentorum have been in times past been attributed to certain popes, their actual authorship is somewhat in dispute. One element of the Roman Mass that did remain rather consistent was the Roman Canon, of which its standardized version was codified for the Church by Pope St. Gregory the Great about 600 AD. The word canon refers to a formal or prescribed list, in this case, the order of silent prayers to be said for offering the sacrificed body and blood of Christ to God the Father. The Roman canon begins after the Sanctus with the Te Igitur, and encompassing the consecration goes to the Per Ipsum, at which time the silence is broken for the Paternoster, which begins the communion portion of the Mass. Part of Pope Gregory's codification of the Roman canon included the arrangement of its prayers into the order we see today, as well as the addition of some saints' names. He also placed the Paternoster, or Our Father, in its present place in the Mass. On this point, some historians posit on certain evidence that Pope Gregory even added this prayer to the Roman Mass and not just merely repositioned it. Beyond the canon, various attempts were made over the centuries to conform the local variations of the Roman Mass to how the rite was celebrated in Rome by the Pope. The most famous example of this occurred under Charlemagne in the late 8th century. The clergy in his domains were using a confusing variety of Gallican rites. To better unite his Frankish kingdom, he wanted his clergy to use the Roman Mass, and so Charlemagne requested Pope Adrian I to send him a copy of the sacramentary he used. What Charlemagne received and imposed upon his clergy, some of whom were not too happy to depart with their own Gallican rite, was the so-called Gregorian sacramentary. As with any change, some of Charlemagne's clergy and faithful were not too happy to ditch their Gallican rite variants for the Roman Mass. To ease this transition, certain Gallican customs were retained and even added to the copies of the Gregorian sacramentary disseminated within the Frankish kingdom. Ironically, a Gallicanized form of the Gregorian sacramentary made its way back to Rome, where it was eventually adopted, which is why some liturgical historians refer to the Roman Mass as the Franco-Roman Mass. Of course, Charlemagne's attempt to Romanize the liturgy in his kingdom had a limited success. There was, of course, certain resistance from amongst his Frankish clergy, who stubbornly clung to their Gallican customs. But even more importantly is that Charlemagne's liturgical reform was attempted before the age of the printing press, and thus when sacramentaries had to be hand-copied, a laborious, time-consuming, and even expensive process. So the implementation of a standardized Roman sacramentary for the entire Roman Church would have to wait for the day of Gutenberg and his printing press. But before we can reach that part of our saga, we must first briefly consider one of the most significant elements towards the standardizing of the Roman Mass, the development of the altar missal. The presence on the altar during Mass of a missal, called in the Roman Rite the Missale Romanum, is taken for granted today, but this type of book is of a rather late and lengthy development. In the early centuries of the Church, Masses were only sung, and according to the solemn form, which in addition to the sacred ministers of the celebrant, included the deacon and subdeacon, as well as the offices of the schola or choir, and the master of ceremonies. Since each minister only needed to know his own part, each had his own book. Thus the celebrant used the sacramentary, the deacon and subdeacon shared an evangelarium epistolari if they weren't themselves two separate books, the schola used the graduale or antiphonary, and the MC, the ordines, which contained the ritualistic instructions. At this time, priests would take turns offering the daily community mass for the ecclesial community, such as in a monastery, but they didn't usually offer their own private daily masses because additional ministers would be needed. Around the 10th century, the sacrificial concept of the priesthood was becoming more appreciated and recognized in the Latin Church, and thus the importance of the offering of the holy sacrifice of the Mass in a priest's daily life. Out of this growing awareness of the sacrificial nature of the priesthood, priests began to offer Mass privately in a recited form and with just an acolyte. But in order to accomplish this new ritual form of the Mass effectively, a new type of liturgical book was needed that compiled all of the prayers, texts, and ritualistic actions into one volume for the celebrant. Thus gradually the altar missal, or missale, was born, which, like the form of low Mass, is unique to the Latin Church. Returning to the concept of a standardized or typical edition of the Roman Missal, the revival of this movement was due in large part to St. Francis of Assisi, who in 1223 dictated in the rule of the Franciscan order that his mendicant friars should adopt the Roman Mass and breviary as used by the Roman Curia, otherwise known as the Papal Court. St. Francis's rule was necessary for practical reasons, to ensure that all of the Franciscan houses were using the same texts and rituals, thus giving unity to the order. This rule also exemplified St. Francis of Assisi's great love as a Roman Catholic to the Holy See. To fulfill this rule, one of the tasks that the Franciscan order undertook was the production or copying of altar missals, which at that time were still being hand-copied. A few years later, Pope Gregory IX, who died in 1241 AD, considered imposing the Franciscan-produced altar missals on the entire Roman Church. Though ultimately he did not command this, Pope Nicholas III did order all of the churches in Rome to adopt this missal in 1277. Thus, at least the Holy City was now unified in how the Roman Mass was being offered. From these events of the late 13th century, a ritualistic sense of Romanitas, or to offer Mass as in Rome, particularly to show unity with the Pope, continued to spread throughout the Latin Church. However, it was really the onset of the Protestant Reformation that gave impetus to the Romanizing movement some real steam to ensure protection against heresy and error in the Missal's texts. Thus, as part of the Council of Trent's reforms, a codified Missale Romanum was worked on and promulgated by Pope St. Pius V in 1570 via his papal bull Quo Primum, thus finally standardizing the rite of the Roman Mass throughout the Church. We'll take a break now and return shortly for the second part of Learning About the Roman Liturgy.
Amen. Magnificat Radio is available locally anywhere you are, through the internet, worldwide. If this is important to you, to have Magnificat Radio available in your life, then your tax-deductible contribution will help sustain it and keep Magnificat Media, Magnificat Radio, going. Thank you for listening to and supporting Magnificat Radio.
You're listening to Traditional Catholic Radio online at Magnificat Radio and MagnificatMedia.com.
Welcome back to Learning About the Roman Liturgy. I'm your host, Louis Tofari of Romanitas Press. A usual feature of this show is the opportunity for listeners to ask a question about the Roman Liturgy, which may be answered in a later show. If you have a question, email it to me at info@romanitaspress.com. Romanitas Press is spelled Roman, I-T-A-S, press.com. Again, info@romanitaspress.com. Having just covered some history on the development of the Roman Mass, we are going to now discuss some particular changes made to it over the centuries. To start out with, you might be surprised to learn about some items that are taken for granted today as part of the Roman Mass, but which were not prescribed until 1570 through the newly codified Missale Romanum. For example, the use of three altar cloths instead of only two, the use of the genuflection as the form of reverence towards the Blessed Sacrament, which in many places only a low bow was being made towards it, how many candles were lit for a low or solemn Mass. Other items for the Roman Mass that came even later was a prescription for reserving the Blessed Sacrament in a tabernacle on the high altar in a parish church, and the precise manner in which the altar was incensed during solemn Mass, something that was not decreed until the late 19th century. Even today, there is a difference of opinion amongst rubricians about how many types of bows exist, which range from a three-bow system to a five-bow system, as the Missal's rubrics are not exact on this matter. That is, the rubrics will state when a bow should be made, but not always precisely to what degree, that is either simple, moderate, or profound. Another interesting aspect of the Roman Mass are the curious remnants of ceremonial actions from earlier eras, thus preserving relics of the ancient Roman rite. It is common to read how medieval liturgists such as Durandus attached symbolic reasons to certain ceremonies whose original purpose were unknown at the time. Later research revealed, though, that there was often merely a practical reason why these ceremonies formerly existed, of which a remnant had been retained in the current Roman Mass. Such examples of an older form of the Roman Mass can be seen especially during Masses with a penitential or mourning character. For instance, the Requiem Mass exhibits the spirit of Roman austerity. The Ember Days possess extra lessons for the instruction of catechumens or for the ordination of the clergy. While during Holy Week, a multitude of ancient practices can be seen, particularly on Holy Thursday and Good Friday, but also during the rites of Palm Sunday and Easter Vigil. Another point of interest are some ancient Roman practices that are still preserved in most of the city's basilica churches, such as vesting the high altar only for the sacred liturgy. In fact, in earlier times, this vesting of the altar was actually ceremonial, as on Good Friday. Flowers were never placed on the altar. Other older practices can especially be seen during the traditional solemn papal mass, for example, having seven acolytes carrying candles to the altar, which originally were placed on the altar itself. The use of the altar cloth size papal corporal, derived from when the corporal was actually the top altar cloth. The omission of an altar bell for the Sanctus etc., as originally no bell was rung during mass. The use of a golden straw or fistula by the Pope to consume the precious blood from the chalice, which harkens to the time when communion under both species was practiced. In fact, during the traditional papal mass, the deacon still consumed the remainder of the precious blood left in the chalice. Other changes or revisions to certain practices during mass concern the singing of sacred music, or more particularly, the Gregorian chant propers. Most of the sung propers were developed to fill up time while a lengthy preparatory ceremonial was taking place. This can still be seen in many ceremonies, such as before the chanting of the gospel, or during Holy Week, for example, the long tract of Palm Sunday, which gave the deacons enough time to vest and prepare for chanting the Passion. Over the centuries, many of the ceremonial preparations were either shortened or omitted completely, and with them, the length of the various chants. This especially occurred with the antiphons sung during Mass. Now, an antiphon is a chant that precedes and then follows a psalm verse. Originally the entire psalm, but today just an abbreviated extract. The psalm itself is usually concluded with a minor doxology, the Gloria Patri. You can visualize this antiphon psalm structure as a sandwich. The antiphon is a top piece of bread, and in between is the psalm or meat, and under of which is a doxology or the cheese. And, of course, this is followed by the bottom piece of bread, which is the second antiphon. In fact, the Greek word antiphon means to be sounded again or repeated. In more ancient times, the antiphon was sung by the lead singers of the schola, and then the psalms were alternated by the schola and even the faithful. This was especially in a time when men and women sat on separate sides of the church. Today, only the introit retains the full antiphon psalm structure, and even here, only two verses of the appointed psalm are required to be sung. However, the additional psalm verses and doxologies can be added if desired. So let's quickly examine what was the original purpose of the sung propers during Mass. The introit antiphon was originally the entrance hymn. In fact, that's where it got its name. And during the papal Mass, it would be sung until the Pope had finished vesting. While another hymn can be now sung during the processional, the use of the introit for its original purpose is actually prescribed for Holy Thursday. The gradual is not actually antiphonal, but a special type of chant. It takes its name from the word step, from when the deacon would ascend the steps of the elevated ambo, a type of pulpit, for chanting the gospel so all could hear him. Most major churches had an ambo in olden times for chanting the gospel, often even a second one for the epistle or lessons as well. St. Clement's Basilica in Rome still has its original three ambos, one for the gospel, another for the epistle, and a third for the readings during the divine office. Two other special chants that are connected with the preparation for chanting the gospel is the Alleluia, sung during festive masses, and the tract for those of a penitential or mourning spirit. Formerly, a long chant was needed while the deacon left the sanctuary to retrieve the Book of the Gospels, either from the sacristy or a locked vault in the church's crypt. The offertory antiphon and its long psalm existed to fill up the time for the ancient ceremony of the offertory procession, when the faithful would present their gifts to subdeacons to take into the sanctuary. Later, this action was replaced by the offertory collection. Finally, there is the communion antiphon, sung during the distribution of Holy Communion. Before closing the show, I wanted to point out two other later introductions into the Roman Missal, which occurred under the influence of the Franciscan Order and their founder's particular attachment to our Lord's incarnation, or the humility of Christ lowering himself to become a mere man for the sake of our redemption. The first one was the genuflection made during the Credo at the words Et incarnatus est Spiritu Sancto ex Maria Virgine et homo factus est. The second was the introduction of the last gospel or prologue to St. John's Gospel about the Divine Word. Originally, this was a private devotion of the preach, which he might say silently while returning to the sacristy, as is still prescribed for a pontifical mass said by a bishop. Later, this was introduced into the actual conclusion of the Mass with the associated genuflection. The addition of the last gospel as an official part of the Roman Mass was finally codified in 1570 by St. Pius V, as well as the last blessing, also once the private devotion and optional practice of the priest. Many other additions have been made over the centuries, such as the elevations of the host and precious blood, but there simply is not time to cover all of these in today's show. In fact, I'm going to have to skip the question and answer segment again. Though actually the show was based off the question of Maria Austin, the daughter of Mike and Lisa. My thanks to you, Maria, for your great question, and my regards to all of you Wisconsin cheeseheads. This concludes today's show. Until next week, this is Louis Tofari for Learning About the Roman Liturgy. Goodbye, and God bless.
We hope you've enjoyed this week's edition of Learning About the Roman Liturgy with Louis Tofari. To learn more, visit Mr. Tofari's website, RomanitasPress.com, and join us here each Thursday as Mr. Tofari talks about the rubrics, the liturgy, and the traditions of the Roman Catholic faith right here on Magnificat Radio at MagnificatMedia.com, living our traditional Catholic faith.